I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome, guys, to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. Welcome to the wild and wacky world of Black Sabbath's Paranoid, an album that needs no introduction. For all the listeners of this show, even new to the show, you would know, first you would have heard of Black Sabbath, and secondly, I'm sure you'd know about Paranoid. It's one of those albums where a lot of the tracks have been played on film soundtracks. If you ever go to see Judas Priest live, you're always in the crowd waiting. The music is going to be War Pigs before they come on, the sirens. It's iconic. I think people say that Black Sabbath is the album that sort of invented the heavy metal genre, even though I've been reading Ozzy Osbourne's biography recently and still reading it now, which I'll be reviewing on the show in a few weeks' time. He doesn't like the term heavy metal, and that's fine. A lot of them don't, those early pioneers. But I think this is the album that most people are introduced to it on. You know, it's like very few Black Sabbath fans will go straight to the first album. Most of them will get Paranoid. Most of them will buy Paranoid or listen to Paranoid first. I'm not going to go into its full history on this album, on this show this week. It's not about that. This is just about the mix, the record I have of it, and my feeling behind the mix. So a little bit of a backstory to this this particular show, this review. I was reading, as I said, Ozzy Osbourne's biography, and it made me start thinking about my Black Sabbath journey and my collection. And people should know by now, if you haven't heard my show, that my very first live gig ever when I was 16 was Black Sabbath, Tony Martin's Headless Cross Tour, Hammersmith Odeon. So it's sort of, they mean a lot to me, along with Iron Maiden, the two of them, and the Sex Pistols, three of the most important bands in my life, and in that genre, of course, not in the sort of heavy rock genre and metal genre anyway, and punk. I was very lucky 2 years ago, very, very lucky 2 years ago, to get an advanced copy of the 50th anniversary box set of Black Sabbath's Paranoid. And in that box set, which is an amazing box set, if you go and look on my TikTok page, you'll see a video of me opening it and stuff lying around. I will put some pictures up where I can remember, if I can remember. And it's a brilliant box set because you've got the original Vertigo labeled copy of the original print. It's a reissue, very nice 180-gram reissue. You've got a triple vinyl live album, which is brilliant. There's a couple of live gigs, all background noise. Nothing's been edited out. It's really kind of there's a couple of alternate versions of some of the songs on the gigs. And then you get album we're going to talk about, which is the Paranoid Quad Mix album, which has been folded back to stereo. Now, that sounds really complicated and audiophile-y, but it's actually really interesting, because those who don't know, quadraphonic sound was the early version of surround sound, right? Quad as in four, quadraphonic sound, four speakers. My earliest recognition of quadraphonic sound is my brother Andrew, because my brother Andrew was always very ahead of the game when it came to the audio equipment. Maybe not always the newest of the new, but he always had the latest. You know, he had Bang & Olufsen, he had Quad, he had also, you know, these things. He was one of the first to be there. First CD players, all sorts of things. Anyway, a quadraphonic sound was very limited on the releases that came out on it. It basically, they take the original mix and then they mix it through four speakers. As you can imagine, it's exactly like surround sound, okay? So you might get some drums in one corner of the room, you might get vocals in another behind you, you might get the guitars, or whichever way it's mixed into the mix. Usually by doing that, you unmuddy and you clarify the channels, the audio channels. So with an ordinary stereo mixer, you can imagine, or even a mono mix, they basically squeeze all of it together into onto a vinyl record that can only really sort of, it takes so much within its sound wall before it becomes messy and it doesn't open up as well, even with the most expensive equipment. But with quadraphonic sound, they sort of manage to make it split even on a vinyl record, which is really quite a tricky thing to do, because as I've mentioned before, with a stereo sound, you use the side of the needle and the bottom of the needle to get that two-channel sound. Whereas with the quadraphonic, I am not sure how it works. I think it's probably taking the doubling that track, which is, you know, like, I don't know. It's just magic to me. Let's just leave it at that. I didn't want to dig in. This isn't a prank about quadraphonic sound. This is just me talking about quadraphonic sound. Anyway, back into the old days. Andrew had quadraphonic, but it was really hard to find anything on vinyl. Now, according to all of the press releases I've read and all the reviews, Black Sabbath's Paranoid on quadraphonic is something to behold. I've never heard it on the full quadraphonic sound. They have released it with the 50th anniversary, if you want to get it, on Blu-ray that has the surround sound mix on it. Now, back in the late 90s, they did do a sort of reissue of a quadraphonic sound mix, but what they did, cheeky buggers, they put four speakers in each corner of the room, mic'd up to each speaker, and just basically played a vinyl print of it and recorded it from that. And that's not quadraphonic sound, that's just the same sound replicated in four speakers, nothing of the sort. That is available, probably careful when you're grabbing that one. If you want to get the vinyl box set, that's quite tricky to get hold of now. I got it, as I said, as an advanced copy, but I think it goes for about $400 on Discogs. You might be able to get it somewhere a bit cheaper, but that's where I've seen it recently. It is available on DVD and CD, where they're actually much easier to get hold of, I can imagine, because they're more mass produced. Strangely enough, it's not available on streaming services. It used to be when it first was released 2 years ago. You could go on Spotify and listen to the quadraphonic mix, and I don't know what's happened. It wasn't there when I was looking for it the other day. Occasionally, I notice with Spotify they go away and come back, so it might come back. But there are other streaming services available, so maybe try another streaming service if you have it at hand, you Apple users, you. Now, back to the quadraphonic sound. So this particular mix is interesting because it's not aimed at a quadraphonic stereo system because you did need a special system to play that. It is, they've taken the quadraphonic sound and they have folded it into a stereo mix. Now, I've read a lot of very negative reviews on this. Why bothers? It makes no sense. I don't understand. And that's really pernickety. That's the audiophiles out there for you. This, trust me, if you get the chance, you play the original reissue, like the latest one. They've just cleaned up some really good print of the album. And then you put on, then you play the quadraphonic folded mix. And I play them through some really expensive, really nice headphones that I use solely, as you know, for my music room. And, you know, put the lights out, listen quietly. And it took me to a place. It was so, I'll talk about track by track when we get to that. But it is so amazing as a mix. How the magicians at the studio have done that is beyond me. Now, you're going to love this, right? The original quadraphonic album came out 4 years after its original release. So it came out in 76. And it was mixed by Mike Butcher. Nice ordinary name there, Mike Butcher. Good name. And a very well-known producer that works with them a lot called Spock Wall. Spock Wall, as in Spock, as in Doctor, right? As in Mister. Yeah, interesting. Eh? You know, it's probably some. It's interesting to me because in the book that Ozzy's writing, he does say a lot of disparaging things about Yes. They recorded Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath in the same recording studio in Willesden, down the road from where I grew up. At the same time, they were recording Tales from a Tropic Ocean. And he said the only person that he really... I won't give it away because I'm going to talk about the book next week, a few weeks' time. Anyway, he didn't like them very much. But, side note, my brother used to get the bus to Wilson High Road and then go to the studio and wait outside for bands to come out, see if he can get autographs. I don't know if he was that successful, to be honest with you. The Pistols recorded there, Sabbath recorded there, Queens recorded there. I mean, everyone who's anyone has recorded there. So it's quite a well-known place. It had its own little built-in bar and cafe in there, so you didn't have, the bands didn't have to leave. Because to be honest, if you're not from Willesden, you won't understand this, but it's not the nicest of places. Dear Willesden listeners, I apologise. You know it's a bit of a dump. Well, it was back then in the 70s, wasn't it? A lower socioeconomic area. Anyway, let's get away from that subject. That's a side note. So, quadraphonic sound. It came and it went. Now, some bands have re-released them on vinyl on quadraphonic recently. Pink Floyd has. I believe so has Crosby, Stills and Nash. And also, I read that Brothers in Arms was released on a quadraphonic mix. But I could, again, that could be my... just something passed my mind when I was or flashed across my eyes when I was sitting getting the notes ready. I didn't make a note down of it because I didn't think it was I was going to go there in the conversation. But anyway, so this transfer is really good. Again, it's on 180 gram vinyl. It's not on the Vertigo label because it wasn't released on Vertigo 4 years after its original release. They tend to be more expensive when they came out than the original prints, which made it also more a little bit unfeasible for some listeners. It was come out in 76, so that's sort of right at the heart of the punk explosion. So it sort of disappeared because, you know, the punks were saying spend no more than a pound, selling records for pennies, and there's, you know, record stops asking £5 or whatever it would have been for Paranoid on a deluxe quadraphonic sound stereo. And honestly, it's no disrespect here, but it was usually owned by people with thick rimmed glasses, tweed, you know, corduroy jackets, pipes, and moustaches. You know, the science teachers, the Mr. McGregors of this world. The, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Gregory, he was my science teacher. was my IT teacher, actually. Anyway, he looked nothing like that. The name just came into my head. He was actually quite young and funky, really, when I think about it, for a teacher. A bit of a dickhead, but young and funky. Anyway, that was quadraphonic sound. It died off pretty quickly because shops wouldn't take the product in. They wouldn't stock it. Labels wouldn't push it. It was too expensive to manufacture. And the equipment was hard to get hold of. You had to change your entire system up. It wasn't like you just bought four speakers. You had to get a new... you had to get a whole new system to play quad sound. And just like the old 3D TVs, you know, people, very few people bought them. When they did, they sort of regret doing it because there wasn't much option for it. And that's the same with this. Not so much now with your surround sound systems because they're quite easy to get hold of, easy to install, relatively cheap, and a lot of products are coming out now on your Blu-ray surround sounds. And one day I might do it. I'm just not into that. I just like the old-fashioned stereo between you and me. But after listening to this record, who knows? I mean, if this is how good it is with a folded quadraphonic sound, it'll be amazing on a full quad sound. Anyway, enough of me this side. You have a quick listen to some adverts. Make me some revenue. Buy yourself some products. And I'll see you on the other side. Bye for now.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to part two of the show with Paranoid's quadraphonic stereo foldback review. As I said before, most of us, in fact everyone probably listening to this show, has heard at least one track off of this album. If it's not War Pigs, it's going to be Paranoid. A little bit of, I know I wasn't going to go into in-depth of it, but I will just a little bit of stuff I found out which I thought was quite interesting. Okay, now this is their second album, and they became, after a crap load of work, They became quite successful quite quickly with the first album. And so they were into the studio pretty quickly with the second album. And by this time, they were on the Wacky Weed, on the Colombian Marching Powder, and the alcohols and all that sort of stuff, and the big cars and big houses. Remember, guys, back then when music was popular and it made money, serious money pretty quickly. I know that the Taylor Swifts of this world will do that, but this is a whole different league, really. Anyway, I know people shake, looking at me going, no, Taylor Swift's very, very, you know, she's very successful, extremely successful, but she's got so many more arms of media reach than Sabbath would have done back in 72, right? So anyway, they had finished up the album and was feeling the producer came down and said, look, it's a bit short. We need something to fill it in. And so there and then, Tony Iommi, the riff master, pulled out the riff for Paranoid. Geezer Butler, the genius lyricist, sat down with a pencil and paper, and away you go, you had Paranoid. Now, it wasn't going to be Paranoid originally, it was going to be War Piggery, was the name of the album, which is it's like a marriage, a Black Sabbath marriage, a witch marriage. But because of the Vietnam War raging at the time, even though the lyrics in this album are quite a bit anti-war, it wasn't advisable for them to do that because they didn't want to break the American market, and they would have never done by being anti-Vietnam. It would have been the end of their career over on the other side of the pond. So quick change of cover, because the original cover had them on the front, all dressed in army fatigues and stuff. So they changed it roughly to the one you see now, which is that strange guy in a sort of Superman outfit and a samurai sword and a bike helmet in a blur. All I can say is that, you know, they must have been right off their faces on that one. But anyway, who cares? Doesn't matter, really. It's iconic, isn't it? It's wonderful. So we get Paranoid stuffed in there. Now, I've heard some recently, doing some research for this, I read some really, really blasphemous, and I'm talking about blasphemous, in my opinion, words. Now, everyone has their own opinion to what they like, what they don't like. I come across this forum, jumped in, having a read, and one of the guys on there was saying that of all the all the first six Sabbath albums, this is the weakest. And I'm thinking, okay, keep reading tone, see, you know, everyone's got their opinion. He thinks that Paranoid is all filler, no, hardly any killer, like apart from a couple of tracks, it feels like it's just too radio friendly. He's heard too much of it on film soundtracks. He thinks Iron Man, Ozzy sounds disinterested and drunk, and he probably was. But if you read Ozzy's biography, he actually loved recording Iron Man, and it's one of his favourite tracks of all of them. So, you know, I doubt that he was that cynical and unhappy recording that. I think you're hearing what you want to hear, mate. This was an old blog, by the way. This is an old review from quite some way back. But anyway, that it just opened my eyes. I thought, okay, so people do have harsh opinions about this album. It's not as universally loved as you once would think. And when I played it again through for the millionth time, but this is probably the 10th time on the Quadraphonic mix, I have some doubts on some of the tracks. But we're not reviewing the actual musical content of the album. We're reviewing the sound of this album, I think, this week. So I will one day sit down and do a real in-depth on Paranoid, but I don't want to. I think some things should just be left alone, and this one is one of them. It's an album that I put on, I like, along with Volume 4 and Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, and I just, it takes me away. I don't need, it's a full course meal for me. It's everything I want. It's rhythmic, it's exciting, it's heavy, it's frantic, it's slow, it's has a message, it's throwaway, it's everything fantastic here, right? Anyway, enough said. We're going to move on to the first track. So I've just put the, imagine I've just put the needle down on my print of the quadraphonic foldback sound, and we get War Pigs. Now, bear with me, I've written a page per notes for each of the tracks. So if you hear me sort of scuffing with the paper, nothing new, you know that. So the thing about War Pigs in between the two versions, it's like night and day, people. It's like night and day. The original print, which we love and know so well, we put on that, you know, generals gathered in their masses. You know, kudos to a man that can rhyme masses and masses, right? And we're used to it. But I put this on, and suddenly, Ozzy's vocals, what they seem to have done is dropped his vocal down on the left channel, maybe echoed it half a second, maybe half a beat. So you're getting this sort of interesting echo of the vocal, which really adds a sort of evil, dark sound. This sort of prophetic sound to his vocal, which the song always had. I played this I was very naughty when I got the print. I gave it to me obviously to have a listen to, a couple of tracks anyway in advance to have a listen to, because he's a big fan as well, and he blew his mind away. He said it was the best Ozzy's voice he's ever heard, and I honestly think that's the case. I, after listening to this track, I want all of their albums with Ozzy to be done the same way. It would be unbelievable. Not just Ozzy's vocal, but Bill Ward's drums have this heft, this frantic, prominent heft. I mean, he's always been a brilliant blues drummer, one of the most underrated drummers of all time. He has this splashy, open-shouldered, free willness to him, this ability to not be restrained by the limit of his size of his kit. You know, he doesn't do a lot of cymbal work, but when he does, it's really meaningful. His tom work, particularly later on in the other tracks on this album, his tom work is just second to none, in my opinion. And the way this track, this mix, brings him round the kit, it's almost like the kit comes round you. I don't know how we're doing it in a stereo sound, but he's doing it right. And as I said, it's magic. Alright. Geezer's bass. Now, Geezer's bass. How do I say about this? A lot of bass players, when they're in the mix like this, or in a stereo mix, or in a quadraphonic mix, they're very stable. They're no stable part of the audio track. They're almost front and center, just keeping that the tightness to the band. If the drummer's being splashy, right, it's holding back a bit. And Geezer does this for most of this album. There is a track where he changes that, but most of this album, he's right there, dead center. And I've never heard his bass sound. I can almost hear his fingers on the strings. It's real bouncy, it's real heavy, it's real doom laden. I know that he likes a really heavy string, but Geezer's a genius, because, you know, originally a guitarist, very educated man, accountant, of all of the band, the most educated of them all, along with Tony Iommi, but he's the most educated man Very, very intellectual, big reader. That's why he did the lyrics for most of the songs. And very conscious about the world around him. Being a child of the 60s, right? You know, coming through that time of post-war ideology, freedom of ideologies, right? But he, it's crazy. And Tony's orchestrations on this track, and all the tracks on this album, he seems to, I mean, he's the riff master, right? He's the greatest riff writer of all time. Bar none, he is the greatest. And it's not what he, when you listen to this mix, because in the stereo mix, it's all squeezed together within a certain bandwidth, you have to lose something. This one, it opens up Tony's sound. It breathes more. It's got more space. It's not compressed as much. His wah, his distortion, his use of the light strings, particularly in the solos, it's much more frantic. I've written in big letters frantic. It's the clearest I've ever heard of his, of the early albums, that is. Of course, later on with the more technology, but of the early albums, of the first four albums, this is definitely. I mean, it's night and day again. It's just incredible. If you play War Pigs and then play this. And then we come into the second track on the album, the title track, the lead single, Paranoid. I've written here, the stereo panning in the intro is just how you want it to hear this song. It pans in the stereo one, the normal stereo mix, but it's not quite the same on this as this one. The panning is sort of... Now, those who don't know what panning means, I will apologise. I will go over the term for newbies. It means the sound going from one ear to the next. If I pan it left, it means all the sound goes left. If I pan it right, it goes like basically balance, and then in the middle. There's a slight synth sound. And I don't know, I've tried to look into it and see if there was any synth played on it. It sounds like there's a synth behind the solo in it. I might be wrong. I mean, I know that on Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, Rick Wakeman did a fair bit of solo, a bit of keyboard work for them. And he charged them his usual price, 2 pints of Courage Best Bitter. What a geezer, right? Anyway, and again, I'd always listen to this song purely because of the lyric. Ozzy's vocal and the lyric sort of, I get stuck listening to the lyric because you know me. If you listen to my show, I'm really into words and lyricism. And this song, I'm more dragged in by the lyric. But then when I listen to this track, I'd love to hear this with no vocals on it. I'd like to hear a instrumental album of this mix, because the Geezer's driving bass on this is something to behold. It's so doom laden. It's so different from anything else ever recorded, I think, even more so than the first album. They've really got their sound on this album. It really comes more prominent, the bass, in this particular track. And of course, you know, Bill Ward's drumming adds to the nuance of Ozzy's really sad and crazy lyrics. I mean, Geezer wrote the lyrics pretty quickly. So, you know, he says that it's a lot to do with breakups of relationships, and it probably is when you listen to the lyric. It is the most radio friendly of the first few singles off the albums, because it's a sing-along, isn't it? It's a good old sing-along heavy track. I won't linger on it too much, but this, as I said, the stereo panning on this track is sweet, 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 sweet. And then we come on to Planet Caravan. Now, Planet Caravan, there's some really good cover versions of this, by the way, out there. It's their hippie moment for me. So it's the moment where they, if you imagine, they've had some nice Afghan hash at the beginning of the recording, and by the time to get Planet Caravan, it's really starting to hit. You can make out all the anti-hippie stuff you want from Ozzy. I think it's all bluff and bluster, to be honest, because Geezer really was a bit of a hippie. So, you know, he really sort of drove that sound in the band. And it's that drug moment. It's their moment where you take a breath. You've had two absolute crackingly roaring songs, and now is a little bit of this sort of... And again, in this mix, now I'm going to sound really weird when I say this, but in this mix, there's a lot of bongos in it, right? I'm not sure whether it's bongos or floor toms from the wonderful Bill Ward. But what it sounds like to me, I sat there, now I turned the lights off as I always do. I even sometimes wear like one of those sleep masks so I get no light. I shut the door, I had my headphones on, and it did for me feel like I was sitting in the mix, I was sitting in the middle of, around a campfire, but in the middle, like not in the middle of the fire, but in the sort of top of the circle. And either side of me were the band playing, and there were several people playing floor toms and bongos either side of me. And the guitar was sort of, it felt like Tony was wandering around the campfire playing the guitar. It was never in the same spot once. It had this real jazz freeform feel to it. Now I know that Tony liked a bit of jazz, at least did try and pretend to enjoy jazz or learn jazz when they were younger, and I think Tony did enjoy a bit of jazz because his father really liked jazz. And there's a real sort of, it's a very Peter Greeny guitar sound. So Peter Green from Fleetwood Mac, early Fleetwood Mac, the greatest blues guitarist of them all, the non-American blues guitarist, I should say, UK blues guitarist. I said white blues guitarist once before and got a little bit of stick from it, but I don't know why. You know what I mean by that, right? All I'm going to say is so I don't cause any more issues in the future, just the greatest UK blues guitarist of them all, Peter Green. And it has that greeny feel. And Iommi would have been listening to that music very much so. And it's beautiful. It also has Ozzy's, I think this is Ozzy's real sort of tribute to the Beatles era music he loves so much. He loves the Beatles a lot, a huge amount. And this has a sort of, you know, the Sgt. Pepper-y across the universe-y kind of feel. And I think this could be their Beatles moment. I mean, they've had a couple Beatles moments in other albums, but this is, on this album, feels like their Beatles moment. It feels like, I know Ozzy didn't write the lyric, but he does put the intonation into the vocal and it sounds that way. And it's just a really great piece of music. I mean, I've heard people say that they don't like this version, they much prefer the cover version done by, I think it was, who was the cover version done by? Let my brain cells. I think someone was telling me it was done by, one second, I have to pause, my brain gets there. One moment. Pantera do a cover for it, sorry, I knew it would come to me. And apparently that is a cracking version, obviously much heavier. I myself prefer this sort of slightly laid back. I know that you diehard heavy metal freaks out there are going to say it's too soft and too laid back, but I probably thought the same thing when I was younger. But as you get older, you realise that you enjoy some of the stuff that you see it in a different way, or you hear it in a different way. And honestly, this quad mix, folded sound, stereo sound mix is just opened up so many. It's like putting water into a fine whiskey or a red wine into a glass and leaving it to sit. It just opened up a whole new way of listening to this particular record. And, you know, I'm going to say it on the Millsy meter, it goes to 11, this album. Absolutely bloody does. And then we move on to Iron Man. Okay. Last track on this side, I believe, is Iron Man. Again, as I said before, people have dissed this song, and because of its very simple rhythmic patterns, I'm going to shout bullshit quite loudly. Yes, it is one of those songs you learn to play on guitar like Smoke on the Water, because it's relatively simple, and you know, you bend the note before the nut to get that sound, right? You can bend it after the nut on the first fret, but it's actually best to bend up before the nut. Yes, it's a simple lyric. Yes, it's a simple piece of music. But it's iconic. It is like, it is everything that makes heavy metal fun, right? It's like Run to the Hills. It's like Breaking the Law. You know, it is just those sort of songs, right? It's those tracks that once written, I'm sure they sat down and went, we'll never have to write another song ever again. Because it's just the simplest rhythmic pattern with a really great soulful. And people say that Ozzy has no soul in his vocals. They can fuck right off, because he has a beautiful soulful voice. Not trained, but then most of them weren't. You know, most great musicians in of the rock era are not highly trained musicians. Okay, they came from it for a love of music and a way out of the shit they were living in. You know, like he said in his book, and I'll mention this again, but I'll mention it again another time, but it was either working in an abattoir, going to prison, or playing in a band. And he loved the Beatles and wanted to play in a band. And he's got soul, man. And this album, this song, this particular track, for me, is the most soulful track of the album. I know people might say that Planet Caravan is pretty soulful. Yeah, but it's soulful in an obvious way. This is Iron Man. Is soulful in a more interesting and dynamic way. The only downside to this mix, and it irked me slightly, I had to listen to it about three times. Oh, I hear you say, hard work, isn't it? So I had to listen to it three times, people. The panning is a little harsh, right? It's a little harsh. It's sort of like, it's almost like the engineer's gone, shit, I forgot to turn it to the left. And you hear it, it sort of goes, there's no subtlety to it. And I just felt that a little bit, that made me a little bit, it sort of took me slightly out of my enjoyment for a moment. I mean, I'm sure I could learn to ignore it, but it's just there. Yeah, I mean, you've got to be honest when it comes to these kind of things. Everything can't be sunshine and lollipops, can it? Right. So for me, it was just a little bit harsh. It's not as fluid, I think I wrote here. But Ozzy's vocals feel more fuller in this mix, in the quad tract. It's quad tract, again, like in With War Pigs, it's like they've got him in four speakers, which really adds to that sort of sad future robot sound that he's got going on there. Geezer's bass in this is driving, it's underpinning, it's whole sounding, it's so I love the way that it attacks in the outro. It's frantic, it's the most textured I have heard in this mix on the whole album. Tony's solo in the outro is something, it sounds like it was an afterthought, because of the way that the time signature changes to go into the outro. But I just think that's just them being clever, right? You know, and Bill's frantic, robotic, rhythmic drum piece in this, it just plays on Ozzy's soulful and sad music. Now, I've heard many covers of this. I have. I believe that Rage Against the Machine did a cover of it. Not sure, to be honest with you. Or was it War Pigs that did a cover of it? I don't know. Anyway, I think it was Paranoid. This one, I think it was Iron Man. Look, there's lots of covers. I mean, there's a brilliant album that came out a couple of years ago by a band called Sabotinero, which was Tony Doolan, friend of mine, friend of the show, from Venom Inc. and others, raising money for COVID sufferers in Italy during the first wave of that dreadful disease that they were suffering from. Basically, because he's a huge Sabbath fan, we're doing Sabbath covers on this album, and it is a I reviewed it, not on the show. I don't think I've reviewed it in a written word. I'll put a link to that along with my Iron Man, my Quadrophonic, my box set review. I think it's his best solo on the album, and I think that the cover versions of it often lose. They lose that depth you get. They make it harder, they make it harsher, they make it heavier. Fair enough, that's fine if you like that kind of thing, but it sort of removes the real tenderness, actually, weirdly, in the vocals. And this particular mix, this quad stereo fold mix, you keep saying that, and quick enough you can get annoyed with it. It's just, yeah, it has a franticness to it. It just doesn't happen in the other mixes. It's just not so muddy, it's much clearer. And then we flip the record over and we get Electric Funeral. Now, Electric Funeral, by a long way, is one of my favourite tracks on the album, purely for the guitar stabbing vocal harmony. You know, Electric Funeral, Electric Funeral. You know, that real sort of, and Tony's sort of bastardization of a blues solo. It, you know, three or four notes, it stabs right into your cerebral cortex, right into the brain. It's, this is, what a way to start side two. That's all I can say. It takes your breath away. It's a really cleaned up version of it. The print on the original mix of it is quite muddy. And you can hear why Tony Iommi is considered one of the greatest guitarists of all time on this particular track. It changes its direction and its pace and its texture and its beat and everything about it in such a dynamic way. It's just beautiful. And Geezer's bass on it, unlike Caravan, where it was wandering around a bit, this feels locked again right in the front, right holding. It's almost like, in my mind, I have an image of Geezer in the front of this, you know, holding back the tide of this unsatiable machine of heavy rock, this wall of sound, this bouncing thick fog of aggression and just pure love of rock and roll. And he's sort of standing at the back like a barrier, like the front, just holding it back and keeping them in rhythm and keeping them in check. It's just a brilliant, but you can see why this is one of the greatest bands of all time. It's just the Electric Funeral. Again, lyrically, it's quite sad, right? It's drug related. You know, they were not at the height of their drug abuse, but they were getting there. They understood but they understood the what they were doing, I think. And Giza is very smart, and I think a lot of this lyric deeply, and I wasn't going to talk about deep by the lyric, but the song really for me is about post-war veterans taking away the pain, opening a vein, right? If you know what I mean? Sticking a needle in. It's quite this is their anti-war album, whether they like it, whether people want to believe it or not, it really is. The audience wasn't ready for that then, but it bloody well truly could be now. Just brilliant. It is a fantastic way of opening the record. If I was a first time listener and I flipped over and put this on, I'd be like, what the hell? Where the hell did this come from? This is like, it's almost undescribable. It's not heavy rock. It's not blues. It's not heavy metal. I know that, right? Oh, heretics, how you say. No, it's not. No, it's not heavy metal. Not in the true form of the sense. To me, it's really like heavy, really heavy psychedelia. Okay. Very Cream-like. Very early. Very, very, very sort of Beach Boy-like almost, right? And then we come to Hand of Doom. And honestly, with a lyric like, first it was the bomb, Vietnam, napalm. Oh my God. Right. I don't know how to describe this. The only thing that I don't like about the mix of Hand of Doom on this particular record is that Ozzy's vocal is undermixed. It's pushed back. The music is so frantic, so heavy, so thick and mixed such a way that you do lose Ozzy's vocal. Now you lose him slightly in the original mix, but you lose him a bit more in this one, and I'm not a fan of that, which is a shame, because this is it just sounds like they're drowning him out a bit. They've got a little bit slap happy with the drums. The cymbal work is beautiful. As I said, he's not a huge cymbal user, but he's great in this. But regardless of that, the vocals, the way that he emphasizes his lyrical patterns are just so stylish and so, again, so soulful on this. I like the fact that it's soulful, that it's not, you know, modern heavy metal is so, it's sometimes so aggressive that to find the soul in it is difficult, and it's there in this. It really, really is. Tony's and Ozzy's mix in the track pans left to right, and it just, once it starts panning left and right, it takes you on this journey, this strange journey into the lyric. And again, I'm not going to go on about the lyric. That's something I want you to listen to in another future program, maybe. It's sort of very grounding. It's uncontrollable chaos. It's drug-fueled madness. Sometimes it's sad. The blend could be better, as I said. It's a little brittle sometimes. I don't know if that's the right word. It's a word that just came to me, and it feels frail sometimes in the mix. It feels rushed in this mix compared to the other mix. But saying that, the way that it pans, the way that Geezer stays put, grounded again, right at the front, right there, heavy in your face, thunder fingers, you know, him and Jeff Entwistle, you know, around the same time, playing that heavy sound, you know, with fingers like thunder. They make me want to pick my bass up and play it every time I hear them play, every time. And it's not just sitting on the root note one octave below, thank you very much. You know, it's not that. It's adventurous, it's interesting, it's dynamic. Geezer often played the Tony's solo pieces directly one octave below and just played the solos as well, which added another dimension to Tony's incredible guitar solos. And that's Hand of Doom, right? Now, these next two songs I read somewhere, and I actually myself am not sure because I have to study a bit more, but there is a theory that the two tracks on this mix, Rat Salad and Fairies Wear Boots / or Jack the Stripper, both the same track, have a different sound to them than the original mix, and I really couldn't quite hear the difference. I could hear the mix difference, but I couldn't hear there was any like any musical difference. The guitar fills out such a huge sound on Rat Salad, and Bill's sloppy blues, jazz and fusion drums sort of take you on this just rhythmic journey. Now, Ozzy has said quite openly he has no idea what Rat Salad or what Fairies Wear Boots actually is about. He has no idea. Does it matter? It does not matter at all. It does not matter at all. If you want to write a book on the nuances and the depth of Ozzy, Geezer Butler's lyrics, be my guest. But right now, it's just about that crazy, almost Alice through the Looking Glass, Alice in Wonderland, you know, and Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe, Lewis Carroll-esque nonsense, which I really enjoy. And, you know, Geezer's sitting under the bass, under the guitars here, and he's following the solos, which is what I was talking about earlier. The dynamics of the drums are dynamic. It's not hazy, whereas I find earlier that Rat Salad version's a bit hazy in the mix. There's some heavy tom work going through it. It's very, very joyful. The tom work is just lovely. Again, very few drummers can make floor toms work the way that he can. You know, Ian Mosey from Marillion, if you ever get a chance to listen to Misplaced Childhood, I have reviewed it, but the floor toms that in that, in I think it's Windswept Thumb, I think that's the track I'm thinking of. Anyway, the tom work on that is just outstanding, and it's the same as this. It's that sort of snappy, heavy, solid sound, and the way he rolls across them in this is just fantastic. Short song, not a great long song. The whole album is only 44 minutes long, 8 tracks. Just that perfect amount of record time. Perfect amount of tracks. Doesn't really hang around too long. You can enjoy it and move on, or enjoy it again and not spend your whole day doing it. It's just joyful. I've written in big letters. If you ever see my book, I've written joyful in a big letters under on the page, and that's how it feels. Now, we end the album, okay, with Fairies Wear Boots / or Jack the Stripper. It almost sounds like they wrote Rat Salad, Fairies Wear Boots, and then just cut it up and used it to two tracks. Because dynamically it sounds the same, particularly on this quad mix. It's got a similar kind of tom sound running through it. As I said, I don't know if there's organ on this. It sounds like there is again. Could be wrong. Feels like there is. Anyone out there more knowledgeable than me on that, on this particular track, let me know. I couldn't find any information written on the sleeve notes, but it doesn't mean it wasn't. There's a fantastic sort of Paul McCartney-esque walking bass line from Geezer here. And it sort of... It really fills up the space, right? Really takes the space somewhere else, and it's actually one of my favourites of the closing songs of all of their albums. And I know that Ozzy absolutely loves this song. He has no idea what it's about, but really enjoys singing it, really enjoys playing it, loved recording it. It's quite sublime. It's very much Yeah, Geezer's pushed back in the mix on this one. He's not as full frontal. He's not. You can almost hear him. He's sort of relaxing a bit. He's letting go of that tidal wave that's behind him, right? He's holding it back. But it's very prominent at the same time as being very quiet. I don't know how he does it, but it's just does it. Lyrically, you know, again, read it, the lyrics, make your own mind up. I think it's just too many late night movies and too much special sauce, if you know what I mean. There was a lot of it going around the camp then, and good on them, because a lot of the time later on in their career it hampered them more than opened up their minds. So this time it did the opposite, and it created a piece of music history that is outstanding and is a must for everyone to own. I know it often appears on top albums of all time lists, you know, in the top 20s. There was one recently where it was top 50 out of 101, which was for me a bloody disgrace. But I don't think they'd listen to this quad mix, because if they listened to this, they'd be going, nah, that's up there. Again, try and get it, guys. I know it's difficult. That's why I've held back on this. I didn't want to do something you couldn't listen to, but I would love to give you that little bit of temptation to try and hunt it out and find it out and listen to it. It is available on YouTube. Whether it's the same kind of sound, I don't know. But you can get the DVD and the Blu-ray somewhere. It comes in the box set. The vinyl is extremely tricky to get hold of now, but it's still out there if you want it. That was the beginning of them. They started doing all the others after that. They did Volume 4, which I've got, and they've done quite a few. They've done Mastered Reality and Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, and I think they're gonna, and they've done Technical Ecstasy. They're all brilliant sets to have. They take a lot of room in your collection, and mind you, they do. But that's just one of the downsides, isn't it? Thank you for listening, guys. Really hope you enjoyed this, and hope you go and listen to it. Do pop over to and email me with any review ideas you want, any ideas you want for the show, any feedback. It's heavymetaltones, all one word, @gmail.com. That's heavymetaltones, all one word, @gmail.com. heavymetaltones@gmail.com. Not heavymetaltones, all one word, because I'm sure there's someone out there that might type that. And that's heavymetaltones@gmail.com. Or come over to my Facebook page. The links will be below. Any bands listening to this that want me to review them, just reach out. I'm happy to do it. Anyone who wants an interview, reach out. I'm happy to do it. Doesn't matter how big or small the band is. I just want to spread the word of modern music, or even classic metal music. I don't care. I just want to spread the word. Anyway, thanks for listening. I've really enjoyed getting back onto this mix, and I think it now will have to be on permanent rotation, I think, on my record collection. Bye for now. See you later on. Keep listening, keep enjoying it, keep rocking. Bye bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.